The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
What's the similarity between Barcelona and Gordon Brown? They both got into trouble with the mic on. Yes, it's a Champions League semi-final special as Football Weekly salutes brave Inter with reaction to Barcelona's Nou Camp exit from both Spain and Italy. And Bayern too. All right, Leon had the work rate of Mr. Hulo on its holiday, and we're every bit as tatty, but we still salute the Munchenmeisters on their way too to the Bernabeu. We also round up all the continental news as leagues across Europe head towards their conclusion. In England, there's Championship latest. Crystal Palace at Wednesday, playing to stay in business. Plus, we provide our usual freewheeling preview of all the weekend's Premier League games, including Man City, Aston Villa and Liverpool, Chelsea. All that plus posts in today's Football Weekly Extra. That's Mr. Hulo, Sean Ingle, John Ashdown and Raphael Honigstein, for it is they, listeners. Yeah, Mr. Hulo, he had a holiday. Incredibly famous film, people.
You were a bit jumpy to that, didn't you? But
I should
apologise, because I'm partly to blame, because I printed out all 100 and something 60 pages or so of the FIFA's Laws of the Games, which sort of chugged up the printer. And
they may come in handy later on. You know, we've got a wobbly table or anything like that. But anyway, welcome to you, Sean Ingle.
Welcome, James.
John Ashdown, Raphael Honigstein. I'm amazed. Nobody, listeners, you've heard of the film, of course, and it was directed by Jacques Tati, hence the brilliant wordplay in the intro there. Good. Now that's cleared up. Prawns tweets in saying, if you accidentally left the mic on when Barry leaves the room, what would we hear? That's a Gordon Brown joke, that, isn't it?
It is. We'd get an 18 certificate, wouldn't we, if we told people.
Really, what we think of Barry. Barry not in the room again today, actually.
Although I bumped into him on the tube yesterday, bizarrely.
Really?
Yeah, just I was on my business. And he was saying, first words he said to me were, I told you so, I told you. I was right about those French surrender monkeys. And he said,
did he say surrender monkeys?
Well, he said the French. And I think the surrender monkeys might have come in.
Might have been synonymous, is it?
Journalistic license. But he was happy. And he also pointed out that they wouldn't have even got to the semis if the two French teams hadn't played each other in the quarters.
In other news, greatest team on planet knocked out of Champions League by Inter. By Jose Mourinho's brave, brave 10 men who for 70 minutes held off the collective might of Barcelona. The question, was it genius or is it a disgrace to football, as some people have been posting in this morning? Raphael Honigstein.
I'd be erring on the side of genius. There's only one way to play Barcelona, and that is to park the bus and play a 7-2 formation or an 8-1 formation, as they did with 9 men. And they did it really well. So, you know, what are they supposed to do? Try to score more goals.
There's only one way to play Barca, and that's not to play them, almost.
Exactly.
But that's not what Inter did in the first leg when they won 3-1.
No, that's right. I mean, they played on the counter-attack and were really, really good. But there was no need to play on the counter-attack. And certainly once they had Mota sent off, a bit harshly in my view, there was no benefit in going forward. And you can't blame them for doing what I think anyone else would have done in that situation.
Several people, as I say, posting in with their negative views on Inter's performance. Roy A1 in particular, football's worst day since the horrible cynicism and negativity of the 1990 World Cup, says Roy A1. Shame on Mourinho, shame on Inter, shame on football. Riddle of Epicurus, similar theme. This is a disgrace, he says, full stop. Italian football, Jimbo, full stop. Horrible, full stop. I personally agree that there was a team that should have been attacking more in yesterday's game. But it wasn't Inter.
I was disappointed. I thought it was a disappointing game. And I was disappointed also with Barcelona. One of the reasons that Zlatan Ibrahimovic was brought in was to give them a plan B, was to give them a different option. And really, long before the end, they were reduced to passing it around the penalty area, probing, without actually really threatening. There was a great save made from Messi in the first half. Obviously, there was a chance late on from Bojan. But until Pique came on in the last 10 minutes, that's the only time really I thought Inter were struggling somewhat, and Barcelona should have had a little bit more cut, a little bit more thrust, a little bit more actually spark at the start. They almost seemed to wait for things to happen, and I think if they had really gone from the off, it might have been a different story.
It's funny because all the build-up, all this business of we're going to leave our skins on the pitch, etc., the t-shirts that they were wielding last Saturday, and it was a curiously unintense approach, especially in the second half, I thought, when you really thought they would kick on and, you know, press.
They were very slow, and it brings to mind something that Sid has been saying throughout the season, that they're actually physically very, very tired. And they looked like a tired team out there, despite having the ball, which is supposed to be less demanding physically. they could never really up their game, and they could never really get a bit of pace into proceedings. Messi looked very laborious even when he had the ball. You know, I don't think that you can blame Inter for doing what any sensible team in the world would have done in their position, and B, you know, this certainly was no big disgrace or injustice because Barcelona didn't do enough.
Well, it's an approach that's been tried before. G Leb tweeting in saying same tactics that Man United used against Barca in 2008, Chelsea in 2009. Have to be said, you do need some pretty special players to pull this off, not only to hold Barcelona in their own stadium when they're hungry for goals, scoreless, but also to do it with 10 men, and absolutely astonishing performance collectively from Inter. I personally thought.
I also think Guardiola got a lot of things wrong.
Yeah.
You know, when you're one man up, what you do, and this is sort of a textbook stuff, is that you basically double up on the wings where there is a bit of space. And they never did it. Inter were always comfortable.
It's quite interesting. Massimo Moratti has just been speaking on the Inter website. He said Mourinho and Herrera, it's a natural comparison. Herrera, of course, was famous for inventing the Catenaccio.
He didn't invent it, though.
Well, okay, he popularised it. But he also said, I like Moratti's last quote, he said, it's difficult to find a defect on Mourinho. Perhaps he is a little introverted, but he is marvellous.
I'm not sure if he means introverted. Yeah, self-centred, perhaps.
I thought Mourinho said something very interesting post-match as well, in that people talked to him about the lack of possession and things that I think it was over 75% that Barca had.
Well, Toon posts in this, 86.4% possession, but only 4 shots on target. And those are worrying stats for Barca.
Well, what Mourinho said was that Inter had deliberately given the ball away in order to maintain their shape. You know, if they had the ball, they would lose their positional sense. And the fact that they never had the ball meant they could have that defensive rigidity and solidity that helped them keep them out.
We should also point out that if that very late goal for Barcelona had been given, and I think it perhaps should have been, then Barcelona was scoring through.
Yeah, well, you held us up by printing off 160 pages of the laws of the game. You read them, presumably, by now.
I have, yeah. Well, page 113 talks about handling the ball, and it says, handling the ball involves a deliberate act of a player making contact with the ball with his hand or arm. And it says, referee must take the following into consideration: the movement of the hand towards the ball, the distance between the opponent and the ball, and so on. And it was not a deliberate handball.
No, but he didn't book him for handball. But he did disallow the goal because there had been an unfair advantage to Barcelona because the flight of the ball had been altered into, I think, Xavi's path by Keita's hand.
It's not in the rules, Jimbo.
Referee last night gave a handball.
Jimbo, I have 100.
I think Riley. Sid Lowe, I believe, maybe on the line. Let's have a listen.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, Sid. What a great time for you to join us. What an opportune moment. We've just been discussing your warnings about Barcelona fatigue and how much of a role they might have played in the game. But right now, what's the word in Spain, and particularly in Catalonia, regarding the disallowed goal at the end that proved so crucial?
Well, oddly enough, I mean, of course, they're complaining about it in Catalonia, but I think more than anything else, there's a kind of overview to the two ties rather than just specifically that result. If you remember the response to the first game in Milan from the Catalan press, at least, was to cry and to call it a robbery and say that it was, you know, it was an armed robbery, I think one of the headlines was, and that it had been an Italian job in terms of it, Barcelona getting cheated. This time, it's not quite the same. As I say, there's more of an overview. There's more of a sense of almost the Catalan newspapers, not for the first time, of course, turning into Barcelona fans over this. And their reaction is one of saying, we're proud of you, we're proud of what you did. Now make sure you don't lose the league as well. So there, of course, has been focus on that goal, but not too much. And I think one of the reasons there hasn't been too much focus on the goal is, of course, that they, even the Catalan papers know that if they focus too much on the referee with a winning goal, then they might also have to focus on Piqué possibly being offside in the first goal. I would say was offside, although I'm not 100% sure because I've not seen a replay that's entirely clear yet. And also, of course, the sending off, which looked a little bit harsh and looked like another fantastic piece of acting from a guy who is making himself more and more enemies with every passing game, which, of course, Sergio Busquets.
Well, it's interesting because last night, in many ways, was a bit of a Scooby-Doo-esque moment in that Barcelona's good guy mask was taken off by pesky kids of Mourinho to reveal the horrific anti-sporting monsters that they are. I mean, you mentioned the peekaboo Sergio Busquets business, but also, as Mourinho was revealing, all the business pre-game, not only the kicking of his car, the spitting at his car we read about certainly in the Italian papers. Also, is it true, Sid, did Barcelona fans line up outside the Inter Hotel with pots and pans and fireworks to keep the Inter boys awake all night before the game? And did Further than that, the Barcelona police not respond to the calls until 3:30 a.m. when they then turned up and demanded to talk about it, and also harassed poor Samuel Eto'o over some unpaid taxes.
That's quite a lot of questions to take in one go, right? First of all, I think it probably is worth drawing a distinction between the behaviour of a few fans and the club.
All right, what about Victor Valdez trying to wrestle Mourinho off the pitch? And then what about the club turning on the sprinklers when Inter were enjoying their moment?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, first of all, you know what? To be honest, from Inter's point of view, surely the sprinklers made it even more fun to celebrate, didn't it? I thought that actually made for a better celebration on the pitch for them. And it's a hot night. What do you want? You want sprinklers. You want to be running in and out of the water. It's fantastic. I thought it was very kind of Barcelona to put on that fountain show like the 92 Olympics. That's what it was. It was the magic fountain for Inter's fans. Yeah, of course. I mean, let's take Barcelona then as Barcelona themselves. Yeah, the sprinkler thing, of course, is out of order. I'd like to know who it was, because, of course, I imagine, at least, that that's not a decision sent down from above. Right, put the sprinklers on. Let's soak these bastards. Victor Valdez, I thought, overreacted. But I must admit, I also thought Victor Valdez, you could make an argument, and I'm not necessarily making this, but you could make an argument that says that Valdez was trying to stop Mourinho winding people up too much, drag him away from being gloating and arrogant, which, of course, is what Mourinho was doing. Maybe there's a caveat there. That's the hotel. Well, the hotel, as I wasn't actually outside the hotel myself, I've seen the footage of it on Spanish television. It was about 20 fans who were then moved on by the police. I must confess, I don't know at what time they were moved on by the police. They also weren't able to get that close to the hotel. And I've been in that hotel. It's an absolutely gigantic monster of a hotel where you can't hear anything of what's going on outside the building. So I suspect it didn't work. That doesn't change the fact, of course, that they tried to make it work.
Sid, we talked after the first leg about Zlatan Ibrahimovic running almost the same amount as the Barcelona keeper. Are there any stats for this time around? Because again, he was poor last night.
Well, I've been looking for the stats. There goes Steph, right? That's how poor he was. I've been looking for the stats, and I can't find stats on distance. I've got stats on passing. The passing stats last night are absolutely extraordinary. Xavi completed well over 30 passes more than the entire Inter team put together. I haven't seen the stats yet on how much Zlatan ran, but I think when he was taken off last night, I was tempted. Now, this might be a little bit over the top and it might be a little knee-jerk, but when he was taken off last night, I was tempted to say, right, that's the end of his Barcelona career. Bought a guy precisely for this situation and you decide, it's not happening, it's not working, I'm taking him off. It's that it's all over. I thought, again, we saw another indication that there's yet another nail in Thierry Henry's coffin as well, with bringing on Bojan and Jeffrey and leaving Henry on the bench. And I must admit, I think that was wrong. I think Henry is one of the few players that could have added something to the Barcelona side last night. And wasn't given an opportunity, as has happened pretty much all season.
Rafael Honigstein.
Sid, I think Zlatan is an easy scapegoat. Don't you think that Barcelona also have to adjust a little bit to do what he needs? I mean, they don't cross. They never look for him in a real sense. They end up hoofing it up to him and then look all aghast if he can't control it instantly with his with the outside of his boot. If you have a guy like that up there who's going to give you goals, you need to get the ball into the box, which is something Barcelona never ever do before the final ball. So I think that there is a failure on both parts, at least.
Yeah, well, I think this is one of the things about Ibrahimovic in the summer, and I know we talked about this in the pod earlier on when we were talking about Ibrahimovic as against Mick Harford. And I think there's a problem there, which is that Ibrahimovic fundamentally doesn't fit Barcelona's way of playing. But in a way, the point of buying him was to give them another way of playing. And you're right, they haven't played towards him. But then that's because they still stick to their original plan and they use him as an alternative. But then when it comes to using that alternative, they don't use it particularly well. I thought last night they did put quite a lot of balls into the box. But you're right, they put those balls into the box late. So in other words, when the ball goes into the box, there's 15 people standing there trying to win a header, not just Ibrahimovic. They very rarely put the ball into the box early. To some extent, I suppose, last night they had almost no choice because Inter Milan lined up their entire team on the edge of the penalty area. And so almost you had to carry the ball to them because there was no point in hoofing it long because you weren't going to catch them out numerically anyway. And it's tempting to say that what Barcelona should have done last night is kept the ball for a bit with their arms crossed and said, come on then, come to us. But I suspect that Inter would have sat in their penalty area and said, OK, fine. And the ball would have just stayed in the middle of the pitch and no one would have moved at all. Barcelona do, I think, also have one or two other ever so slight problems. You mentioned before the tiredness. I think that meant there was a slight lack of sharpness in some of what they did. I think the absence of Andres Iniesta makes a real difference because he has the creativity and the ability to run at people that maybe other people in the side don't have. And then I think, and I felt this for a while, and this is reminiscent to some extent of Barcelona at the back end of the Frank Rijkaard era, sometimes they could do with someone who can shoot from 20, 25 yards to force the defense, even if he doesn't score, to force the defense to step out and stop him taking those shots and therefore have the ability to play the ball through the gap, which they only really did once. And that was the PK goal, which, by the way, I thought was absolutely sensational. I think PK is getting better and better.
He certainly is. The stat, by the way, of Ibrahimovic is when he was taken off, that actually doubled the number of yards he'd run so far during the game. Is there any word, because Mourinho post-game was saying that the two key moments in this in the two legs had been, obviously, the goals in the first leg, but the second one, he said, was when Barcelona wore the silly T-shirts on the weekend. He said, whoever thought of that was a genius, that's when we knew they were afraid. Has there been a little bit of kind of a hindsight vis-a-vis that the whole kind of build-up of the remontada and all that pressure that they created for themselves, Barca?
Not a huge amount yet. There's been one or two minor comments about it. For example, I was saying, wasn't I, at the weekend, oh, it's great, Barcelona through because they bought T-shirts. I thought it was a bit naff. I thought it was a bit sad. There's been a couple of minor comments, but only really passing ones today, about how Barcelona allow themselves to be obsessed with fighting and getting into the game and being aggressive, and that the team had to try and kind of remove themselves from that mentality. I think there was an element of truth in that Barcelona had to be calm and not be rushed. But maybe last night, actually, they were almost over-calm sometimes with the ball. There hasn't yet been any major criticism of that just yet. In fact, you know what? I think the likelihood is that there won't be more T-shirts, I'm sure, but there will be a continuous campaign along the lines of, right, we now need to make sure the league doesn't happen, so we've got to continue with the same attitude.
Sid, throwing things forward to the weekend, Barca have a tough game against Villarreal, while you'd expect Real to win quite comfortably at home against Osasuna.
Yeah, Real Madrid are going to win the league. But of course, we don't know that. And of course, that's only an off-the-cuff prediction. But you look at the running that the two teams have got, I don't see Real Madrid dropping any points, unless on the final day when they go away to Malaga. Malaga still have to win to survive, because Malaga are one filthy team and might well kick lumps out of Real Madrid. Whereas Barcelona have to go away to Villarreal this weekend, who traditionally have had very, very good results over Barcelona over the last 5 or 6 years. And they also have to go away to Sevilla. I think there's a genuinely good chance that come Monday morning, Real Madrid will be top of the table.
Gotta Dammerung, eh? Means like Twilight of the Gods, Raphael.
Yeah.
It's kind of like end of a... Yeah. All right, excellent. Sid, that's fantastic. We look forward to speaking to you on Monday.
Yep, fantastic. Speak soon.
Crikey. Well, of course, speaking of all things, Germanic, Bayern Munich facing Inter in the final on the 22nd of May at the Bernabeu. And we'll be talking about them, their semi with Leon, and so much more, listeners, right after this.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Blunt Guardian says Mourinho can start salting his hat after Louis the Great is finished with him. He'll have to eat it. Yes, Louis van Gaal, ex-Barcelona manager, of course, and his amazing Bayern Munich team. Big, big winners at the Stade Gerland against Leon. A lot of praise for Olic. But Raphael, once again, this is a Bayern team that seems to be getting stronger and stronger the more the season goes on, from that low point back in whenever it was, November?
Yeah, in the autumn, when they lost twice back-to-back against Bordeaux, they were nearly out of the group stage and they were nearly out the title race in Bundesliga. And Van Gaal was nearly out. I think he was about one offside goal away from, and this is not Fiorentina, this is Leverkusen playing for a 1-1 draw at Bayern. They should have won that game, and there is now a very strong indication, or has been for quite a while, that he would have been out of the job if it hadn't been for that, for a disallowed goal, because Leverkusen should have won that game easily, comfortably.
The perception is that they are a lucky team with the offside goals, that they've had an easier route to the final as well, because they took on this reasonably abject Lyon side that certainly did consume cheese and all the other attributes that Barry was suggesting that French teams would show late on in the competition. But there's more to them than that. They are worthy finalists. They are a real threat in the final, no?
After a long, long time where they really haven't been anywhere near the top of Europe, they've now put themselves in a position, and this is mostly through Van Gaal's workings, of being in a position in the first place where luck can make a difference. In the years before, they were so far away from the real elite that getting lucky once or twice wouldn't have made a difference, any difference at all. Because they were beaten 4-1 by Milan. They were beaten 2-0 at home by an ageing Milan. They had almost no chance against Chelsea when they were knocked out the year before. So, it's a very different team. And the interesting thing is, of course, it is a team modelled both on Barcelona, and explicitly so, with Van Gaal repeating all the time that Barcelona are his role model. And for that reason, he wants to play Inter, and he was very, very categorical on that. But also based a little bit on the failed, but ultimately not so stupid idea of the Zidanes and Pavones. Because if you look at that team, five of the players starting came through our youth system. Two more players were signed on a three. So seven out of these 11 players who started didn't cost them anything in transfer fees.
Mm.
And it's because of Van Gaal's patience with younger players. And, you know, he put on players there who'd never played in the Bundesliga, yet alone the Champions League, before the season. And all of a sudden they're in the final. That will allow Bayern, hopefully, from their point of view, to invest the considerable money that they do have smarter and on better players in the future. Because before that, they used to sort of be always caught between thinking, yeah, we'd love to sign big players, but we don't want to spend big money. So they ended up sort of signing second-rate, biggish kind of players or people that they thought might one day come good, which they never really did. Now, with Van Gaal, both on and off the pitch, they have a philosophy, they have a strategy and a concept. And I think it is reflected in the results.
Mm, very good. Meerkat United FC says, question for the pod or anyone else out there. Bayern have lost four games in this season's competition, could rise to five. What's the highest amount of games lost for a team getting to a final and a team winning the competition?
Off the top of my head, I don't absolutely know, but certainly Real Madrid in 2000 struggled.
Yeah.
They finished, this is when you play two group stages, and they finished behind Bayern, I think, in the second group stage, and then found their form. They certainly lost a lot of games during that season.
Mm, very impressive, Sean. Adam Farrell says, one for Rafa. Do the Germans sing Football's Coming Home as an intentional jibe at England, or do they actually like the song?
They like the tune. They have no idea this is about England's hurt and all this stuff, because when it's sung in Germany, there's a different version with all these bits, the references taken out. So they just
what references do they put in instead?
It's nothing. It's just wear the shirt and have fun and a really innocuous. And it's all in English, but it's all really innocuous sort of naff Euro trash kind of nonsensical lyrics.
Oh, good. Frank Ribery is going to be out of the game unless this appeal somehow works, which you think is unlikely, Rafael. Is that going to have a big impact?
Well, they'll miss him because he'll be somebody who can turn it on and who can do something against an Inter side that will be waiting for Bayern, I think, to a large extent, and play on the counter. At the same time, Altintop came in an unnatural left-sided position in midfield, played so well, and is, of course, much more disciplined when it comes to tracking back and defending and keeping a position, that there is almost a sense that perhaps it's not such a bad thing for Ribery to miss the final.
Mm.
Collectively, they'll be probably better without him.
Oh, very interesting. All right, that's not until the 22nd of May. In the meantime, as we mentioned way back at the start, leagues all over Europe are rolling towards their conclusion. Briefly, what's the situation now in Germany? Schalke and Bayern tied on top, yes?
Tied on top. Bayern ahead on goal difference quite comfortably, and I think Bayern have an easy game against Bochum at home, and Schalke have a not-so-easy game against Bremen at home, and I think they could well not win that game, Schalke that is, and Bayern could well win, well, at least theoretically, win the title on Saturday.
Mm. Bochum, Dano, murder one. Right, okay, in other European football news, in France, Bordeaux have now lost their title. It's Marseille who are plugging away at the top, 71 points. They're whopping 5 points clear of Auxerre now, so it does look like Olympique will be champions once again. Holland, FC Twente. Is this the last game this weekend in Holland? It is, isn't it? They've got they're away to Nac, while Ajax, who are 1 point behind them, are at Nec. It's neck and neck, you might say, and yet neck and neck.
I hope McLaren's chances aren't knackered on.
Yeah, let's, from his point of view, hope that Ajax don't nick the title on the last day. I tell you what, there's some mileage in this. Rafael, do you want to have a go?
No.
There's not many vowels left. You could have knock, but I don't know where you can take that, really.
Nuke.
I hope you're enjoying this, listeners, as much as we are. Also, in the wide world of European football, of course, little old Italy. Roma, you recall, were top of the table. They're now 2 points behind after defeat by Sampdoria. And with three games to go, the only likely place that Inter might drop those 2 points again is this weekend, when Inter, knackered presumably after their sterling work at the Camp Nou, will be away to Lazio, Roma's neighbours. Now, Roma thus need a favour from Lazio. The question is, what are Lazio going to do? Are they just going to roll over? Or are they going to play this one when they ultimately don't? I mean, they might need some points for safety, but they're pretty much clear of relegation. They don't really have anything to play for. If they win the game, could see their loathed neighbours take the title. And interestingly, there were message boards this week, Lazio fans saying, you know, what are we going to do on the weekend? Nothing. We can go along to the stadium and support Inter. So does look, you know, in an interesting parallel to that Liverpool-Chelsea one that we'll be discussing later, that Lazio fans are pretty clear on where their priorities lie. Anyway, There you go. Just on the subject of Italy, just before we leave this, I thought it was fascinating, Mourinho's comments post-game. While Marca, the Spanish, well, the Madrid-based sports paper, titled this morning, "Well done, Jose, you've done it, you get to sign for Madrid," he's said that he's never had a club that he feels as close with as Inter, even more than Chelsea, and that Wednesday's achievement was even bigger, even more important moment in his career than winning the Champions League with Porto. And when asked about his future, he says right now he's thinking 100% Inter. I don't know if this means anything different, but this idea that he's definitely going to Real Madrid, I mean, as Sid has pointed out many times, it's not the ideal club from his point of view, given the amount of autonomy he generally employ. So, well, maybe he will be staying after all. The championship, John Ashton.
What, do you want to know what's going to happen this weekend?
What's going to happen this weekend, John Ashton?
Well, there's one final, as we mentioned on Monday, actually, that there's one final playoff spot to play for between Blackpool and Swansea, who both have winnable home games. The big game, though, is at Hillsborough, Sheffield, where the Wednesday take on Crystal Palace with relegation to League One at stake.
Mm.
Anything other than a win for Wednesday will see them back down in the third tier.
Which, Palace, a draw.
A draw is enough for Palace, yeah. Having they played West Brom on Monday, where a win would have kept them up for sure. And in the final seconds, Darren Ambrose had a shot incredibly cleared off the line by a West Brom defender whose name escapes me, to deny them safety. So they have to go to Hillsborough and get a result.
Right. Now, there's a certain amount of optimism about Palace's ability to get the result because they've got a good away record. But there's equally a lot of pessimism among Palace fans that whatever happens, even if they stay up, they could go out of business and cease to exist within a week or two, because the administrators of the stadium, which are separate administrators of the club, don't want anyone to buy the club. The only people trying to buy the club will only buy it if they have the stadium. And the people who control the stadium would rather the club went out of business so they can build supermarkets, parking lots, etc. there.
Yeah, it's a really sticky situation. And a few teams have got into a horrible situation where the stadium, their sort of solid assets, have been separated from the football club, which leaves teams incredibly vulnerable to developers and people who are keen just to make money out of property rather than run a football team. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, in terms of their financial future, it's a huge game for Palace. A championship team is a far more attractive proposition than a League One side who, regardless really of the result, are going to have to shift a fair few players over the summer.
Mm.
They have got some saleable assets on the playing staff, but not. I don't know if it's enough to cover the debts at the moment. Yeah, it is worrying times for them, definitely.
Mm. Yeah. Blackpool, though, all sorts of sunny optimism up there. Lanky Yankee, John Ashton. What is so remarkable, asked Lanky Yankee, about Blackpool possibly making the playoffs? The fact that the Guardian's championship expert predicted they would get relegated. Is that true, John?
It is true, yeah. Oh. Yeah. I did do a
rotten
blog
luck
a few months later saying I got it wrong. So I have, right. I have already admitted to that. Although, to be fair, when Ian Holloway took over last summer, he admitted himself he was down to 14 players, three of whom were goalkeepers. And, you know, they had a huge rebuilding job to do. His stock wasn't particularly high because he'd been out of football for a year, having relegated Leicester in his last club in charge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so things hardly pointed for a hugely optimistic season. So I think it is remarkable. It's a really fantastic achievement for... They have spent enough money to make them competitive.
Mm.
They broke their transfer record last summer to bring in Charlie Adam.
Well, Lanky Yankee lists one or two stats about the club, and the question would be, what chance do they have in the Premier League, were they to get promoted? Capacity crowds of 10K and only three quarters of a stadium, the Premier League may not be too keen, says Lanky Yankee. On the plus side, it is a great day out for opposition fans, which is a good job since they won't be getting into the ground, he says. The club is solvent, the tangerine kit is the most attractive in football, and proud Preston would be oh so jealous should they make it. Well, a couple of seconds for Raphael Honigstein to remove those matchsticks, and we'll press on with our Premier League weekend preview. Right, busy weekend in the Premier League, and lots of exciting fixtures, none of which you're going to, John. You've got what? Birmingham-Burnley?
I'm at St Andrews I hope it's St Andrews. Birmingham against Burnley.
Good.
Which is the dead rubber of all dead rubbers, I think, this weekend.
Is that so? Birmingham, though, still will have the services of Joe Hart, which was the subject of some controversy this week. Man City deciding that none of their goalkeepers, their reserve goalkeepers, were actually good enough. So they managed to exploit this rule which says you're allowed to get an emergency keeper in. A lot of upset people posting in about this. UK gringo, this Man City are playing for a loan deal, GK, really gets my goat. He points out Spurs having to use midfielders in at full-back. United had to play with Carrick at centre-half, etc. Arsenal had to put up with Silvestri and Bentner due to injuries. Why is it City think they're entitled to special treatment? Why is it, Raphael?
Well, because unfortunately, for some bizarre reasons, there is an clause allowing you to make that kind of move. And that, first of all, should be removed immediately. And secondly, it should have never been allowed because they still have professional keepers on their books who are paid for being in goal. So, you know, why can't they do their job? If they're not good enough, why are they on their books? It's absolutely ridiculous.
Now, they weren't allowed to sign Joe Hart, but that wasn't because he was too good, as some people were posting. It was because he's with Birmingham and there's no recall clause in his loan deal. Otherwise, they would have been allowed to call him. Or is there some kind of distinction between reserve keepers and first choice?
Birmingham were amenable to Hart going back, but the other clubs weren't happy. The other clubs vying for fourth weren't happy about it.
All right, well, there you go. Man City, of course, are struggling to make that Champions League place. They're going to be taking on Aston Villa, who are directly above them in the race for fourth. Aston Villa, of course, tied with Spurs, who are in fourth place, but Aston Villa have played one game more than City and Tottenham. Villa's chances at Eastlands?
Well, the odds are about right at the moment. The odds have sort of City as slightly odds on, which gives them about a 55% chance of winning. If you look sort of back at the history books, they have an excellent home record against Villa in the Premier League. They've won 8 and drawn 2 out of 12. You would think with a bigger squad, Villa have looked a little tired in the last couple of weeks. They certainly were lucky against Birmingham last week. You'd fancy City. It's not a match I'd particularly bet on, given the odds at the moment.
Although Villa are pretty decent away from home themselves, the reason that they're not clear in fourth is I think they've drawn 8 at home, which they win 2 or 3 of those, and it's they're sailing clear. So they've clearly got a way of playing away from home using Agbonlahor's pace on the break, and it could be interesting. I think it might be close.
Meanwhile, slumping Spurs are at home to Bolton. Van der Vaart next posts in saying Spurs have given away 5 penalties in 2 away games. Mental, which would have been relevant if they'd been away, but it is extraordinary stat. That presumably is a home banker.
Yeah, should be. Bolton have nothing to play for.
Why do I have a recollection of Tottenham losing? Did they not lose at home to Wigan?
They lost to Stoke. And they also lost to Wolves as well.
At home?
Yeah, 1-0 both games, I think. So, again, Spurs should win this quite comfortably, but you know, there is that caveat there.
There certainly is, isn't there? Stoke, who you mentioned, all sorts of fun there with Abdoulaye Faye and Glenn Whelan in a punch-up, apparently. What was all this about?
At half-time and full-time in the game, at the 7-0 thrashing at Chelsea. Apparently, Faye didn't warm up in the proper shoes beforehand.
He wore flip-flops in the warm-up.
He wore flip-flops, yeah. And
traditional at Stamford Bridge, of course, isn't it?
And Glenn Whelan took exception to that and confronted him at half-time, and then there was more goings on at full-time. What's interesting to me is...
And then Faye smacked him in the face for confronting him.
Yes,
that's
he did.
The story, yes. Anyway. Yeah.
It's interesting. Today, Tony Pulis has come out and criticised one or two precious people, quote-unquote, in his squad. And he says, we have no concrete evidence who it is, but we were desperately disappointed because the dressing room is a good dressing room. But you sort of think, well, there was the Fuller and Andy Griffin slapping each other on the pitch at West Ham not so long ago. There was a whole Pulis allegedly headbutting James Beattie, and now this.
It's amazing to get uptight about somebody's footwear. Particularly Andy Bull of cricketing fame came into the office wearing flip-flops yesterday, and nobody accosted him and bapped him on the face.
Right, but to be fair, he wasn't warming up on a football pitch.
No, he was strutting around there.
Well, maybe...
Could be health and safety. Yes. Maybe that's what Glenn Whelan was concerned about.
Probably it was. I'm just going to move on, though. West Ham are at Fulham. Hey, it's a big game tonight, isn't it, Raphael? Fulham-Hamburg. Why? Why is it a big game?
Because it's the second leg of the semi-final of the Europa League? Or are you hinting at something else?
Coefficient
something
news.
Bigger.
Yeah.
Well, the Bundesliga has overtaken Serie A this week, thanks to Bayern's win. And
see, I don't understand that because, I see, Inter lost but went through. Whereas Bayern won. That's the clever thing. Yeah. Right, okay, go on.
They're still ahead after Inter's qualification for the final, which gave them another point. Serie A is. But if Hamburg win tonight, it's all over. And Germany will have that.
From the 2011-2012 season.
Correct. We'll have that fourth Champions League spot.
Come on the cottages, eh? It's a big game, though, isn't it? Nil-nil. Are you confident about Hamburg's chances?
I am very confident about Hamburg's chances, I must say. I thought the 0-0 was a good result for them.
Really?
They got rid of the manager that they clearly hated.
Yep.
They've got a very popular guy in there. I don't know if that's a long-term solution to get the most popular guy of the staff in as your manager, but short-term, it very often works because it creates a camaraderie and a sort of sense of collective purpose, which clearly was long gone by the time they played Fulham in the first leg with Labbadia. It was just a complete disaster.
All right, well, they don't go any more popular than Gianfranco Zola, who's in charge of the West Ham team for now, that Fulham will be facing on the weekend. What the hell is going on at West Ham? Asked Doug the Head. The entire squad, save Parker, is up for sale, say the owners. But then they're going to sell more than they buy, which means there's only a small number of the squad will be actually sold, which leaves a sizable number of players at a club where they know they're not really wanted. Great way to raise the spirits. It does seem to be an extraordinary thing to announce, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're just... well, you know, the Gold and Sullivan are like two self-promotional chances, really.
In a nice way.
Yeah, in the nicest possible way. No, I detest the pair of them, actually. It's not in a nice way. But anyway, this week they made a £4 million bid for Graham Dorans of West Brom. So clearly there's some finance there that isn't necessitating this fire sale. And the other thing is who's making the decision to sell all these players? Because Zola seems certain not to be there next season. And so is it Golden Sullivan, you know, taking control of first team affairs and picking and choosing players themselves? Who knows? It is a bit of a mess.
Who knows? Of course, the one player that they say isn't for sale is Scotty Parker, which, as Doug the Head says, puts Parker in an odd position where he may be perceived as a bit of a teacher's pet. I'd be upset, wouldn't you, Sean, if shadow Uber producer Matt Hall came in here and said, you know, your positions are all on the line apart from John Ashdown. I know how John would be treated.
I didn't think anybody was listening when Matt said that. It's a bit awkward.
Well, certainly it's an announcement that will do wonders for the transfer values of the squad. So it's really smart business decision.
Indeed. Now, for many people, the big draw of the weekend will be Liverpool's match with Chelsea. Liverpool still in with a slim chance of making the top four, but there are those who suggest that they would rather lose this game and let Chelsea take the point so that Manchester United don't win the Premier League title and thus end up with more top division titles than Liverpool, 19 to Liverpool's 18. Is this seriously a possibility?
I just quite like the suggestion that Liverpool have a choice. Shall we win or lose? I just can't decide. In all likelihood, most of Antwerp will still get behind them and they'll still get beaten.
Fair enough. Slim Pickens says, good to see the pod not taking the possibility of Liverpool throwing the Chelsea game seriously. Surely the need to win the game isn't the outside possibility of finishing fourth, but the real need to avoid seventh. So he means to lose the game, to avoid seventh and having to start the season 18 days after the World Cup finishes.
He's talking about Europa League qualification. Yeah. I don't think Benitez will be in the slightest concerned about starting the season 2 weeks early against the Lithuanian runners-up.
With Juventus?
With Juventus. I think he'd be more concerned, A, about the possible Europa League final, should they qualify tonight, which will give him the perfect excuse to rest the one or two standing strikers or lying strikers he still has. And B, I think the fans really would prefer, I guess, a draw would be an honourable result, but then they can say, well, we didn't throw the game, but we also perhaps did enough.
This isn't Italy, we have to remember, though. Yeah. Teams don't always sort of shake hands before the game and decide on these sorts of results. I think there's, even if the fans aren't interested, I'm sure the players will be reasonably keyed up for it.
Well, of course, whatever happens with Chelsea, Man United have to win their game because they are still 1 point behind Chelsea at the top of the table. They are at Sunderland, who don't have a huge amount to play for, Sean Ingle.
No, they don't, and that's reflected in the odds. At the moment, the odds suggest that United have a 5 out of 7 chance of winning. I would suggest, though, that Sunderland at home have won 9 and drawn 7 out of their 18 games. And if United are without Wayne Rooney, that, you know, I think that's not the worst bet in the world for Sunderland to get something.
Interesting. All right, nice one. That's it then for today's Football Weekly Extra. And we will be back on Monday with our reaction to all of that top football fixture fun. So hopefully you'll be joining us then. In the meantime, many thanks to today's stand-in producer, Ian, who's manned the pumps manfully, Raphael Honigstein, John Ashdown and Sean Ingle, and you, the listener. Bye-bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.